So next up, we're going to hear from Scott Ritter, who I think in some ways needs no introduction. I think people here are probably pretty familiar with Scott and the sort of leading edge role that he's played in trying to get accurate information out, both to the American people and the people of the world. He, of course, was the author first of Iraq Confidential Missile Capacity to General Schwarzkopf in the 1991 Gulf War. Nation Books is the publisher of Target Iran, The Truth About the White House Plans for Regime Change, and also of his first book, Iraq Confidential. Seymour Hersh has to say about Scott, the important thing to know about Scott Ritter is that he was right. I'd say the important thing to know about Scott Ritter is that he is right. He's right about Iran. Let's hear from Scott.
Thank you very much. I was wondering what that sound was. I thought it was a fire alarm at first. I said, man, we got to evacuate. Good timing. But it's an honor and a privilege to be back in Santa Cruz. I've been here before, and I'm always overwhelmed by the hospitality and the intellectual curiosity of the people that that live here. Thanks for coming out tonight. You know, my name is not Jeff Cohen. I am not a media expert. And so, you know, you got the media take from Jeff, and I concur with almost everything he said. I think he can be more critical of me sometimes, but I think a lot of us can go through more criticism, including the government of the United States of America. You know, we have this tendency where we try to soft pedal things. We try and be too polite sometimes. We try and put the kid gloves on. We don't want to be harsh. Life isn't about being harsh. Life isn't about being abrasive. We don't want to start out with that being our our going in position. But life should be about being honest. And sometimes the truth is abrasive. Sometimes the truth requires us to take a harsher look at a topic. And when we examine some of the problems that we find ourselves in today, like what's going on in Iraq, what might be happening vis-a-vis Iran, you know, there's this tendency for people, and again, I exclude those in the present company, but I, you know, when I say the people, I'm not talking about you, I'm not talking about us, I'm not talking about the minority of Americans who are actively engaged in examining in a detailed basis the actions of those whom we elect to higher office. I'm talking about the majority of Americans who have failed egregiously in their responsibilities as citizens of this country. People who basically live day to day not in accordance with the demands of citizenship, not in accordance with the obligation we incur when we say we are Americans, obligations we incur to live up to the ideals and values set forth in the document that defines who we are and what we are as a people, that being the Constitution. But the fact that most Americans have long since, I can't even say forgot, because they never seem to acknowledge their responsibility as citizens. We ceased functioning as citizens, we the collective, as citizens a long time ago. Citizenship requires people to be able to define their core value, their center of gravity. To call yourself an American citizen means one thing and one thing only, ladies and gentlemen. It means that you have read, comprehended, and adopted into your very essence the Constitution of the United States of America. Because there's only one thing that defines America. That is the Constitution. That's it. It's the Constitution that sets down the ideals, the values, the notion of the rule of law, the things we believe in, the things we aspire to. And the key element of the Constitution is right there in its preamble. We, the people of the United States of America. We, the people. It's government, as Abraham Lincoln said, of the people, by the people, for the people. That's the way it should work. But this requires the American people to be engaged in the processes of governance. We have disengaged a long time ago. We're no longer citizens. We're consumers. we've wrapped ourselves in this cocoon of comfort, and so long as the powers that be keep us waddling down a relative path of prosperity, we don't want to rock the boat. And so the American people take the easy way out every single time, whether it's dealing with, you know, social issues. Let's not look at those black kids in the inner city. Let's ignore that they exist. Let's not talk about the difficult topic of immigration. Let's not question the government on Iraq, because to question the government on Iraq, I'd have to actually get off my butt and study the issue of Iraq, find out what's going on when someone says there are weapons of mass destruction. I, as an American citizen, would have to find out, what is a weapon of mass destruction? What are they talking about? When they say that Saddam Hussein, as Colin Powell did, held up a little vial of white powder and said, this is dry powdered anthrax, and a few teaspoons full of this can kill thousands of people if spread over the country. And people go, oh my God, this is horrible stuff. See, the American citizen, a true citizen, would have went, yeah, Mr. Powell, but just a second here. I've studied this issue a little bit, and the Iraqis never produced dry powder and anthrax. So why are you holding up a vial of that, Mr. Powell? And, you know, what they would have done is hold up a bottle of Diet Coke and said, if you want to talk about Iraq's anthrax, you should hold up a bottle of sludgy brown liquid and say all they ever produced was liquid bulk anthrax. And it has a viability under ideal storage conditions of about 3 years. And the last known batch came out of Al-Hakam factory in Iraq in late 1990. And here it is, 2002. You're standing before the Security Council of the United Nations telling the world we should go to war against a country for something they never even produced. That's what an American citizen would have done, ladies and gentlemen. But we didn't do it. We, the collective, did not do it. We didn't take the time to study the facts. And as a result, we're neck deep in a quagmire of our own making. Our own making. You can call this George W. Bush's war all you want. But never once forget that before there was George W. Bush, there was Bill Clinton. That Bill Clinton had initiated the same policies of regime change based upon a misrepresentation of the fact regarding Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. All George W. Bush did is take advantage of the fact that we, the people, have been pre-programmed in advance to accept at face value anything negative said about Saddam Hussein, the dictator. All you had to do is get on mainstream media and say Saddam is evil, and everybody went, oh yeah, evil. No one wanted to ask the question. And God forbid you ask the question, because it's not just about attacking the motives of the administration. You suddenly become accused of defending the dictator. If you stand up and say, hey, I have a question about weapons of mass destruction. What are you, sympathetic son to Saddam Hussein? Or even worse, as Jeff pointed out, you must be taking Saddam's money. What a ludicrous assumption that is. I'll tell you what, when we're all done here tonight, we can go to my villa down in Palo Alto, and we can party, thanks to Saddam. What a ridiculous thing. But the point is, nobody wants to talk about the facts. Nobody wants to talk about the real issues. What happens is that we take the national debate down to the lowest common denominator, and that, unfortunately, is mainstream American citizens. For a nation of 300 million people, ladies and gentlemen, and the most technologically advanced nation on the face of the earth, we are populated collectively by the most ignorant people in the world about the world we live in. And this is a very dangerous place to be. A very dangerous place to be. Especially if the salvation of our nation is dependent upon we, the people of the United States of America, to do the right thing. I believe in the promise, in the hope, in the potential of America and the American people. But unfortunately, it oftentimes requires us to make a big mistake before we learn from our lessons. Right now, there's a lot of people that say that the election that just occurred in November is a reflection of the American people learning from their mistakes. Because we voted for a Democratic-controlled Congress that will hopefully lead us down a path that deviates from the course that has been chosen by George W. Bush and the Republicans who have misgoverned for 6 long years. Oh, we've learned our lesson, we're told. There's a lot of hope out there. Hope that Congress will understand the will of the people. The Congress will do the right thing on behalf of we, the people of the United States of America. The Congress will seek to disengage from the disaster that is Iraq. The Congress would never again get us involved in military misadventure abroad. The Congress will do this. The Congress will do that. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't work that way. First of all, what is Congress doing about Iraq as we speak? As we speak, what is Congress doing? They just received a report from James Baker, the Iraq study group, in which certain proposals have been put on the table. These proposals don't involve the rapid disengagement of American forces from Iraq. They involve the repositioning of American forces. They involve the retasking of American forces. They involved coming up with new terminology, new language, a new lexicon for American engagement in Iraq. But the last thing it does is solve the fundamental basic problem, which is the presence of American troops in Iraq. You saw no debate whatsoever. You see a lot of people saying, man, it's not going right. Man, we're not doing the right thing. Man, we should have had more troops. Man, we should have done this. Man, we should have done. How about, man, we should never have invaded to begin with? Let's see somebody put that one on the table. You have a lot of people out there that say that the vote that just occurred in November is reflective of the fact that the American people, we the people, have suddenly become imbued with a spirit of anti-war. Really? Anti-war? We're against war now. That's why the majority of the American people now are standing up and saying, what, we should never have invaded to begin with? No. We're not anti-war. I tell you people, if we had gone into Iraq, toppled Saddam Hussein, installed a functioning, viable democracy, had the Iraqi people greeted us with songs and flowers, and everything went hunky-dory, and today there was this vibrant democracy in Iraq, the American people would say, this is the best thing that ever happened to this country since sliced bread, even though it was built upon the same lies that we got. Even if the president had said, there are weapons of mass destruction, it turns out there's no weapons of mass destruction. If the president lied to Congress, if the president lied to the American people, if it had all gone well, we'd be all embracing this wonderful victory. We're not anti-war. We're anti-losing. This war is bad because we're not winning. And this is a sad reflection on the reality of the state of the American people today. So don't read into this election at all, ladies and gentlemen, and believe that somehow we have turned the corner and that we're heading in the right direction. We're heading straight to the gates of hell right now. If you think that the Democratic Party is an anti-war party, then talk to the Democratic Party about their position on Iran. Oh yeah, we know they're not happy with Iraq. It's easy to be unhappy with Iraq if you're a Democrat, because you get to blame it all on George W. Bush. You don't ever talk about the role that the Democrats played during the 8 years of the Clinton presidency in paving the way for war in Iraq in 2003. You don't talk about the role played by Democrats in Congress to facilitate this war. You don't talk about the continued cowardly behavior of the Democrats in Congress who fund a war that they know is fundamentally wrong. You just say, they're anti-war. What you're saying is they're anti-Bush, because it's easy to beat up on Bush on the issue of war. But ask them about Iran. Just go up and ask them. Ask Nancy Pelosi about Iran. Ask Barbara Boxer about Iran. Ask any one of your elected representatives about Iran. Ask them where they stand on the issue of Iran, and I will tell you what the vast majority of them will say. That Iran constitutes a serious threat to the national security of the United States of America in the form of a nuclear weapons program. And if you accept this at face value, I'll tell you what you're buying into, ladies and gentlemen, war with Iran. Because you cannot sit there and allow the government to articulate a threat in the manner which it did about Iran and then walk away from that problem. If Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapons program, then we are truly facing a critical, potentially life and death struggle with the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's why it's dangerous if we just sit there and accept at face value any contention that they are pursuing such a program. because we fall into the exact same trap that we collectively fell into leading up to the war with Iraq, where we were told that Iraq is pursuing weapons of mass destruction programs, that Iraq refuses to cooperate with the inspectors, that Iraq is a fundamental threat that must be dealt with, and everybody nodded their head yes. And now it turns out that nothing the Bush administration said about Iraq was true. Nothing. Not one thing. Except maybe where it was geographically on a map. They got that right a couple thousand times as we put satellite-guided bombs into the homes of Iraqi civilians. So here we are. What do we do? What do we do about Iran? How do we even begin to correct this wrong? Because we are on the path of confrontation. Well, the first thing we have to do is empower ourselves with knowledge and information. But before you even do that, we have to come down to what I call the center of gravity. I spent a lot of time lately talking about the art of war for the anti-war. Now, a lot of anti-war people, a lot of peace and justice people hate that concept. Why do we want to know about the art of war? Well, I just told you why. Because you're at war. Not a shooting war. We're not talking about pulling out a gun and shooting the nearest neoconservative. No, that's not the kind. You're in an ideological war. There are certain elements in America today that are pursuing conflict with Iran, who are pursuing conflict with Iran as part and parcel of an overall objective of leading to American domination of the globe, a new American empire, American hegemony, things that run counter to that which we should stand for as Americans, especially if we have read and adopt and embrace the Constitution of the United States of America. We are at war about the core value of what America is. So before we talk about going off and waging this struggle, and it is a struggle, it is a war, we have to come to grips on who we are and what we are. What do we stand for? So the very first thing is to ask yourself, what do you stand for? What do you believe in? What's your core value? And I'm telling you right now, if you want to win this struggle, it better be a core value that can be embraced by all Americans. And that is the easiest core value of all, the Constitution of the United States, the rule of law. The ideals and the values set forth within that document. You start from that point, and the rest of it becomes quite easy. We are in ideological warfare. We're fighting an enemy that wants to destroy us. That enemy resides within this country. We must engage them with all of the tenacity that General Patton engaged the Germans in World War II. You must come out with them with all the ferocity that the Marine Corps had storming the beaches of Iwo Jima. This is a life and death struggle. And you need to prevail. You're not going to get another shot at this thing. So it's not just about writing your congressman and saying, oh, Mr. Congressman, Miss Madam Congresswoman, do something for me. We know this doesn't work. It's worked one or two times that I'm aware of. One time I was personally involved. I was in Omaha, Nebraska, talking with a whole bunch of corn-fed right-wing Republican funders of Senator Chuck Hagel. By the time I finished with that discussion, I had 2,000 people saying, what can we do? Well, you know what? When you write the paycheck to put Senator Hagel into office, you call up Senator Hagel and he will listen. 2,000 people called him up and Hagel responded. But if you write letters, it's going to be like spitting in the wind. Maybe letter writing isn't the right tactic. This is why I talk about the art of war. See, to sit there and write letters, you say that's what American people should be doing, writing letters to congressmen. But is it going to work? Is it going to work? How about getting the people who fund your representative to write the letters? And if they don't want to write the letters, how about holding them accountable? You guys are pretty good at doing demonstrations, aren't you? You do them all the time. But you run out and you have a demonstration in the street without any focus on what you want to achieve. I'll give you a demonstration. Find the guy that writes the check to your local representative who's doing something you don't want. Go up to that person and say, we want you to sign a petition or a letter to the congressperson. And if they don't, demonstrate outside their office. You know, we're in the period of time where all these people make money. They make a lot of money right now at Christmas time. You want to hurt somebody? Boycott them during Christmas. Have a picket line out in front of Christmas. Not for a day, not for a week, for the whole damn month. Have a sign that sits there and says, this person's for torture. This person's for murder. This person's for illegal war of aggression. They say, but I'm not. You say, you are. because you wrote a check for our representative who supports these policies, and you won't write a letter asking the representative to change their policies. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're waging ideological war, and we have a chance of winning and prevailing. We got to do this across the broad spectrum of how we deal with our daily activities in America on a political basis. The tactics of old, dump. They don't work. If you're part of the peace and justice movement, if you're part of the anti-war movement, come up to this reality. You're losing. You're getting beat. The enemy's winning. We got to take a long, hard look at what we're doing collectively. We've got to sit here and understand that we're here to win. If you're not here to win, what is it all about? A giant act of self-gratification? Go out and have a demonstration so you feel good, light candles, hold hands, sing kumbaya? Create a radio station that only yourselves listen to? How about finding a way to actually prevail? How about finding a way to wake up 300 million fellow Americans and bring them to your cause so that we can become the nation that we should be, the nation that we have the potential of being, a nation based upon truth? It's going to require us to change a lot of things. The media, it's going to require us to change it, but nothing's going to change until the basic outlook of the average American citizen is changed. And the key element to that is to awaken the notion of citizenship. Once you engage yourself in this process, once you invest yourself in this great nation called the United States of America, we will inevitably do the right thing for all Americans. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you tonight.